Welcome to Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey, the podcast where we explore complexities, breakthroughs, and unfiltered realities of the lives as touched by autism. I'm your host, Ruth Castle, here to guide you through heartfelt stories, expert insights, and empowering conversations. Whether you're a parent or a sibling, an educator, or an advocate, this is your space to find community, ask the hard questions, and uncover new possibilities. Let's dive in. Welcome back to Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey. I'm your host, Ruth Castle, and today we are diving in to a necessary topic, adaptive swim and water safety for neurodivergent individuals. And did you know that drowning is one of the leading causes of death of autistic individuals? Water can be both an incredible source of joy and danger if the right precautions aren't in place. And that's why today's guest, Coach Joy Cardahan, is here to share life-saving strategies for teaching water safety in ways that truly meet the needs of autistic and neurodivergent individuals. We're going to talk about the differences, you know, between adaptive swim and traditional lessons, and the new challenges that our kids face, and practical tips for keeping them safe around water. And this is an episode that every parent and caregiver needs to hear. So let's dive into it. How I came to know Coach Joy is actually, you know, where my son gets swim lessons. She's actually Elijah's coach. And a lot of people will say to me when they find out he's in swim, because, you know, my son's nonverbal, and they act like, I can't believe he can even do that. You know, everybody puts limits on, especially, absolutely, I feel like the nonverbal population. Mm-hmm. But even our children that, you know, are minimally verbal, or they still put limits on them. And
absolutely,
I don't like that. But he is definitely, and that's how we came to know each other.
Absolutely.
And we kind of call ourselves like a mom ship because,
oh, yeah,
we clicked so right away.
Immediately. I knew she was a keeper.
And same with her, because I was like, she's so awesome. We get along so well. And she has done great strides. You have done great strides with Elijah.
I mean, so have you. I think that you need to really give yourself a round of applause. Yeah. I see a lot of different kids and dealing with the spectrum and other neurodevelopmental situations, whatever it may be. Struggle because they don't have the support they need. And it's so wonderful to work with Elijah, who has somebody that is constantly in his corner and is constantly working with him to make sure that anything that can be done with it for him is done, and all the good accommodations that he could need are put in his path. It just sets him up for success.
Thank you. And I know, you know, you have children on the spectrum.
I do have three.
So, you know, you understand. Sometimes you can, there's two types, I feel like, I mean, it could be more, but, and you can elaborate on this. Like, there's two types of autism moms. Ones that go all in, and some that just maybe are just overwhelmed and don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be overwhelming. However, you know, I just take the bulls by the horn. I think you're kind of the same way.
I always have been. I, you know, it's funny. I got into behavior in general. My degree's in behavioral health care and focusing on ABA because I knew that there was a thing my son needed and I needed to understand it. I needed to provide it in a way that was meaningful to him. So I went from an education degree over to a degree in behavioral health care. That it just made sense. You've got to dive in and learn. And that was the best way I could at the time.
Yeah. And I think as we move through this episode, you guys are going to learn a whole lot more about, you know, Coach Joy. And like, she is awesome. She's kind of like myself. She has a lot of multifaceted, like, different perspectives of life. And I think you guys are going to learn that throughout this episode. And it really comes together, especially when she's coaching, you know, doing swim. But that's not her whole identity. is just touching, but she is a phenomenal coach.
No, thank you. I do my best.
Yeah, you're not enough coach. And then you, okay.
So I wasn't always a coach. I actually started out as a 6-year-old that really loved to swim. My dad didn't know what to do with me as a young kid, so he set me up for swim lessons. And then I had the right attributes to be able to try synchronized swimming, and I ended up competitively synchronized swimming. The first time I competed in the Sunshine State Games, I didn't know I was in the Sunshine State Games until about halfway through when they started handing out medals. But it was super cool because
how old were you?
I had to be like 9. Yeah, it was late 80s, early 90s kind of situation. Nobody needs to do the math there.
Don't worry.
Synchronized swimming or artistic swimming now, it was so very young at that time that it was, you know, pop everybody's bubble. It was a lot easier to get that far in synchronized swimming at that point. We weren't throwing anybody in the air either. So it's very simple things. But that's where everything started, is I loved to swim. I was a little kid that just was drawn to the water. And, you know, looking at my kids and looking at my history, I can make some connections about why that might be. But, you know, that's not what we're here for today.
But, you know, that brings, like I said, she's multifaceted. It brings a lot of experiences from different perspectives of,
absolutely,
you know, your growth in the world. And sometimes maybe you learn a lesson on your journey and it's not even about autism, but it can be utilized and redirected in something that you can adapt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially into your, you know, because parenting does not come with a manual.
It doesn't. And that's really a shame. It would be helpful. One specifically tailored to the child in front of me, please. Because if we've seen one kid with autism, we've seen one kid with autism.
Yeah, not all the same.
Absolutely not.
That's why, you know, I love the name of the podcast.
Yeah.
Because they're individual. It's
your journey.
We are having our own journey with our children. You know, so that's what I think is so interesting.
Yeah, what works for one person, it just might not work for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's individual education plan for a reason.
Yes.
So let's see. I'm a swim coach. I've done a number of certifications through the swim school that I work for, as well as I've done some stuff through Red Cross. I've done a big lion's share of certifications through Boy Scouts of America, now Scouting America. And that's where I did my lifeguard training. And so I've got kind of a wide expanse of knowledge when it comes to water safety and helping out kids with ASD in general. I've got a lot of experience with Boy Scouts as well. So that's kind of my aquatics experience. My experience as a life person, as a human on this planet, and in relation to autism, absolutely started in 2004 with the birth of my daughter. She came out perfectly healthy and beautiful, most beautiful child I've ever seen, and hated the water. As someone who was a competitive swimmer and loved all of these things, I just couldn't wrap my head around it. It didn't make any sense to me.
And she's still not really a big fan.
Not a huge fan. No, she will swim. She's doing a lot better, but she is just,
she's not aspiring to be like her mom.
Oh my gosh. No,
no.
She loved to go see, because the U.S. team, the U.S. synchronized swimming team, actually winters down here. So we would go and see the team come and do their shows every year. So she loved to go see it. Didn't want anything to do.
It's just like, I will watch.
It's not beautiful.
Yes.
Go away. But, you know, I realized that there was something up, and it was really my first experience with autism in general. I didn't really have any kind of breadth of knowledge for it. I just knew that something was going on with my daughter and I needed to do something to figure that out. That was almost 21 years.
So, you know, what inspired you to focus on working? You know, I will say this, she gets a lot more of our ASD kids, mm-hmm. you know, within our, you know, so what made you want to work more with that population?
It takes a certain temperament, and you have to have a certain frame of reference to work with our kids effectively. If you are working with a kid and you're frustrated with their behavior and they can't communicate to you, just imagine how frustrated they are. If you can't take that into account, I don't think you should be working with children with autism. Not if you have any choice in it. Obviously, there are parents that haven't found their place in that and found their patience with it yet. And I understand that. But as a professional, I think that it's almost my responsibility, because I'm able to do these things, to make myself available in a way that supports our autism community, because they supported me when I was at the beginning of my journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, if Coach Joy wasn't available, there was only one other coach that I preferred. I forget her name. But he did it with her a couple of times.
Katie.
She's right here. That light was on. She come from Michigan.
Oh, Bella.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bella's fantastic.
Yeah, I liked her. She was very, very good with Elijah. Not as good as you, but
I think Bella's a fantastic talent. She's just, you know, she's younger. I don't think she's had a lot of experience with ASD as much or working with ASD populations necessarily. But I think she's great. She just doesn't. She doesn't have the background I do. That's all. I think
she's only like 19, but she's really good with him. But you know, if Coach Joy wasn't available and she wasn't available, I'd be like, nope. We can't do it today because I just know we're going to have behavior. I know we're not going to be probably heard or understood, like how they take the time with them.
And it's unfortunate that they have a pool full of fantastic coaches. Really, I love every single one of these ladies that work in the pool with me. But, you know, not everybody has the background or the experience to kind of do this. I think we have another one that you would actually love, but we just haven't gotten there.
And, you know, and that's, you know, coming from being there, like you said, early in your journey, you know, you got support from your community, even though back then it was probably smaller and the internet was not as rampant as it is now.
If it wasn't for the fact that I, you know, would talk to moms and I was lucky enough. Gosh, I'm going to go ahead and shout out to Jessica Beekman Rowe, who absolutely kept me above water in those first days and learning and handing me books and just keeping my head up until I got my feet under me and understood where I was going and how I needed to approach this.
Yeah, it's nice to have a support system.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, that's why I created my group because it was during COVID when my son was diagnosed and he not.
Wow. Yeah.
I couldn't go out. I didn't have anybody I could talk to. And, you know, the internet's a scary place. So I didn't want to just be like, I wanted to connect with experienced parents or maybe that are going through the same thing and built my own community.
And you've done a beautiful job, though. I mean, when I first met Ruth, you know, it was just, I have a parent in a pool and we're learning. As I've gotten to know her, the things that you have accomplished just because you're like, I need a community is amazing. They're really fantastic.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I've been working hard on trying that. And, you know, changes are coming to our community, too.
I see that.
Because I want it to be a little bit more, you know, inclusive for everybody.
Yeah, I get that.
And searchable. The keywords are just not there. So I'm changing it for keyword purposes.
That does make sense.
So it'll be easily found. Okay, so how does adaptive swim differ from, you know, like traditional swim lessons?
You know, a traditional swim lesson is going to be very structured. On the outset, you think that that's going to be really positive for our kids, but the expectations are not usually in line with, I don't want to say capability. A child will raise to your expectations, mm-hmm. but we need to understand how to approach things. Like I said earlier, every student is different, and that goes especially with children with ASD. So it needs to be tailored to, I think, not just their style of learning, but their style of communication. Everything needs to come together to be supportive. Do I need some kind of AAC on the side, or can we develop some communication? What does that therapeutic relationship look like, and how can we use that to help out? There are things that I might not use with a neurotypical child that I'm going to use with a child with ASD or even with just phobias to make sure that they feel safe until we can get to a point where I can fade those supports and show them that they've learned enough to not need them anymore. Not that I'm a big fan of fading supports. Let's put that out there. But in swim, it's important for them to learn that they can take steps.
Yeah. And even like fading supports out and other things too, it's okay as long as they're not needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like,
that's a structural coping mechanism.
Yeah. You know, it's like training wheels on a bike.
Absolutely.
You know, but I love that you're saying is you cannot have a one, you know, fits all type approach with this because it doesn't work. And when it comes to adaptive swim too, you know, I believe Elijah, because someone asked me, what is one of the kids asked me? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, what is he? What, you know, starfish or what are all the fishes?
Tadpole, swimmeri, seahorse, starfish, minnow. Then we get into our turtles and then our sharks.
So one of the kids asked me, and I didn't know how to answer it. So maybe Coach Joy can answer this.
He's a dolphin.
He's a dolphin.
He's a dolphin. Our adaptive swim program are the dolphins.
Okay. So see, I didn't know that. And I was like, I don't know. I was like, we're just working on water safety. You know, that's my goal with him is water safety, being safe, learning that he can get out of the water and being okay with it and having a good time. You know, of course, we're learning skills because he has learned a lot of skills. But my main goal is for him to be safe in the water and be safe around water.
Absolutely. And so important.
Yes. Very. Yeah. And I think you've done a great job getting him to that.
I appreciate that. I love having Elijah in the pool. He's such a sweet kid, and he's so communicative. Anybody says he's not, right? Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not saying he's writing a dissertation to me, but he lets himself be known. And I think that that's kind of one of the most important things with adaptive swimmers. You've got to know how to listen in non-traditional ways.
Yeah.
You've got to understand, number one, the behavior is communication. Mm-hmm. Gosh, the fact that this is a new concept to people really stresses me out. But
no.
That just because he didn't put it in English doesn't mean that his utterances aren't purposeful.
Yeah, like, you know, his gestures, his nonverbal cues.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes he, and you've heard it, he does have some language.
Absolutely.
And like, people are always like taken back when he does talk. Is this apraxia? He can't always convey what he is wanting to say. It's because it's hindered by his motor. It has nothing to do with capability.
Yes. Oh, no, he can communicate just fine.
Yeah. When he wants it, right?
Yeah. Well, even when he doesn't, he will let you know he's in a good mood. He will let you know that we're having a good day. He will let you know he wants to go somewhere. Sometimes he has to do it by heading in that direction, but that's fine. It's purposeful. You know, that's really useful for him. And I'm glad that he does it. I'm glad that he feels safe for it.
I'm glad he feels safe with you, because sometimes it's not everybody. You know, he doesn't feel safe with everyone.
It's about fostering that relationship, though. If you don't have it for anything, it's a therapeutic relationship. If you don't have that relationship, and if they don't feel safe trying to communicate to you, you have no hope of communicating with this person.
Yeah.
I don't care if they're 3 or 300.
Yeah.
They're probably not going to be 300.
But you never know.
Zombies.
We'll let you in on that later.
Promise.
So, and you know, you always consider his sensory needs. I love how you give him breaks.
Absolutely.
So she'll make him do his work. Like, he has to do his work, and then he gets to go to the part where he can touch, and you let him have like 2 minutes and like do whatever he wants to do. And then he has to do it, you know, whatever.
You know, I started my education in therapy with ABA, and I've got a complicated relationship with it. I think that there's a lot of ways in which behavioral psychology absolutely meets the mark and does great things. And I think that there are other ways in which we're way too rigid and we don't really consider the entire human, and it can be problematic. And I think any practice can be problematic if it's not well informed. So I like to utilize a lot of the things that I learned in that that foundational ABA course of, you know, we're going to need to reinforce that. I want him to work on kicking across the pool, and he wants to play with toys, or he wants to play around a little at the shallow end. Okay, you do for me, I do for you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a relationship. And that's how the world works. So, you know, I'm saying, I will do this and you will do this. We've made this exchange. Cool. What do we want to do next? Is there something you want to do more? Let's utilize that. And maybe we'll do arms down. Maybe we'll try something really hard, but we're only going to do it once.
Yeah.
Because that was hard. That takes a lot out of us. And now we're going to have a lot more time at the other end, because I understand that that was a lot of work. Trying a back float, or God forbid, going underwater, that can be really stressful.
Yeah. And I like how you do it with him too, because it's like you're giving him option of what he, you know, is going to do next. And sometimes I feel like, because I give him options, I, you know, validate his choices. You have this, or give him options. And sometimes the options will end in the same result, but it's in the way we get to the
Absolutely. Result.
I think that's important to give, you know, children, especially maybe starting at the age of 2.5, options, because they that's the time when they're starting to find that autonomy. And I've always given them options, like, do you want to wear these shorts or do you want to wear this shirt? You know, 2 options of each. And then, you know, that way you're keeping a little bit of control because you're getting what you need out of it, but you're also allowing them explore their individuality by making, they have a choice in the matter.
I learned when I was teaching the new mom support groups and facilitating all of these family groups and young children groups, that one of the best ways to deal with a child with just any kind of demand avoidance, be it they're two or they've got a little bit of PDA, is giving them options and allowing them to feel as though they are and really have autonomy in general. Really, my most important statement I think I could make, and that is, how can we expect them to make good decisions if we haven't given them a chance to practice?
Yeah, I love that.
That is my big go-to, is if we haven't allowed them to try, how do they know? Well, we're waiting until they're making high stakes choices to really give them the opportunity to do so. That's not fair. That's not fair for a neurotypical kid, let alone one of ours.
Yeah, it is. It's very true. All right. So why is drowning such a risk factor, you know, and it's higher for autistic individuals?
Considerably, it is the number one cause of death in children with autism. And that is specifically from, the Florida Center for Autism, mm-hmm. I believe, online. I made sure that I had a citation for that one today. But children with ASD are 160 times more likely to die in a drowning accident. They are 70 to 80% more likely to die in drown in their own pool. So us being in Florida, it is so important.
There's so much water.
Oh my gosh, we're looking at water right now, right out a window. There are retention ponds. There are so many ways in which we're trying to conserve groundwater. And every single one of them is a danger to our children. So if we're not at least allowing them the opportunity to try, we're really failing that population in general.
Elijah is not so much now, but used to elope, you know, wander off and things like that. So that is huge, you know, when you have an eloper, and we live in a state like Florida and there's so much water around. And that'll be a different episode for the wildlife.
Oh, my first was also a traveler, I understand.
Water safety concerns are huge. And that's why, you know, having an adaptive swim or getting them into lessons that will help.
Absolutely.
With this is something that, you know, all parents that have children on the spectrum should really consider.
Yeah. And it needs to focus on safety. It needs to focus on not just the structure of how we're teaching a kid to swim, but the structure of how a child with autism can be safe in and around the water. I spoke to one school recently that one of their tenets is they make sure that they make the child ask twice to get in the water before they get in. Twice. Because that way you've done it. You know that you've done it. You've asked twice. I'm trying to find ways to do that in an adaptive manner to build that in so that we're making that such an important piece of it. There are, you know, a lot of swim schools will start at a backflow. Well, my ASD population might not do that. My ASD population may, Elijah's not one of them, but may throw themselves in the pool over and over again. They want to be underwater.
Yeah.
And it's not until they find that they can't breathe that they start to panic.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to build from the fact that they've thrown themselves into water, I have to build behaviors and figure out how we're going to develop that relationship and build the behavior of them turning over and getting themselves out. It's so important that we do this, because with the water everywhere, they could at any point find themselves in danger.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point about the backflow too. You know, Elijah, he had primitive reflexes still present, and it's hard for him to do. So learning some skills like if he fell into water, this is what we're, you know, preparing him for, is to roll over and be, you know, just float. But he doesn't want to do that because his moral reflexes, neck, hasn't developed about going back. So we're integrating those, and swim has helped tremendously integrate these moral reflexes to, and moral reflex, primitive reflex has been integrating, and it's, swim has helped with that. So if you are looking to get another thing in your toolbox, that is something too. If your child is experiencing having, you know, those moral reflexes, those primitive reflexes, and they're not integrated, swim definitely helps with that integration as well. It's taking the weight off the body, and a lot of, you know, just doing even submersions, going underwater, hand over hand, crossing the body, that's crossing the midline. So these things will help your child integrate those. And then also the kicking, you know, because they got to go kick like this.
And move the body separate.
Move it next
different
separate.
Direction.
So this helps.
It's absolutely. Yeah. It integrates everything together.
Yes.
Yeah. We've had the benefit of some wonderful OTs over time. And they've taught me a lot about what to do. And I find I'm constantly adding that into that. Our progression navigation as well, we're constantly trying to add things in that are going to help everybody with a broad base. Like every child can benefit from crossing the midline type behaviors. Doubly so with our adaptive kids, things that can build up those core strengths so that they can actually move their bodies in the way they need to and develop coordination in the way they need to. Can even help cognitively.
Oh, yeah.
Really cool stuff.
Yes, because once they start doing those primitive reflexes and getting those all integrated, it does help. I think it's probably more like a brain fog, because think about it, if your body's not functioning the way you need it to, is your mind?
I have said for years that my job has always been to get my kids out of their own way, to get all of those, my gosh, the word I can't remember. It's a symptom, all of those symptoms that keep happening that aren't really the cause, and they're more the problem than the actual what we've pathologized in general. The symptoms are more the issue. If we can get the symptoms out of the way, all of a sudden we've got this kid that's considerably more capable than anybody ever understood.
Yeah.
What is Zach doing right now? He's going to graduate high school. He's going to be an Eagle Scout. He's on his way to be an Eagle Scout. He's making straight A's.
He just came back from a trip.
Just came back from a trip to New York without his mother.
Mm-hmm.
God help me. And I survived it. I guess.
There's a lot of prayers
involved. There was definitely some prayer involved. There's a lot involved. But it's wonderful. But once we're able to do that, to some degree, we're able to see considerably more. That's what I say. You know, kids will. I learned that when I was an ed major. Kids will rise to whatever your expectations are. If you have low expectations for them, that is where they're going to plateau.
Yeah. And, you know, some people will say to this too, and I've heard it. They'll say, you know, don't have outlandish expectations. Okay.
Or you're British, scale it back a bit.
Like, what are you doing?
Presumed competence. Yes. Let's presume competence.
So, you know, you presume competence in a child. Sometimes it is way out of their scope.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is fine. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think presuming that they can do it is better than saying no and limiting the child.
I like to presume capability.
I like that.
Maybe they can't do it yet. I don't expect that none of us is going to be able to sit down at piano and play a concerto yet. Not the first time.
Yeah.
We build it just like we're building muscles, just like we build a building. We're building with Legos. We start at the base. We create a foundation and we build upon that.
Yeah.
Same thing with swim. We start at a foundation. First, can we be comfortable in the water?
Yeah.
Can we move across the water with me? Now, can we move across the water with a swim noodle or with a float? Can we even touch a float, or is the float scary? Can we, you know, and it's so important. Adaptive swim is so important. We need to start where that child is. Begin. If we're not meeting a child where they are in that journey, then we're not really serving that child. We're just creating expectations and that are unrealistic.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that leads us into what is the right type of adaptive swim? And, you know, what should that look like? Well, I think we hit it right on the head, you know, like it has to be made for the individual. It has to be, you have to take the person in consideration where they're at, you know, like you have some more that seek out, like you said, jumping into the
pool. Absolutely.
And sometimes that's got to be corrected. That behavior has to be corrected. And my son, they took a little time for him to get in the pool. So I have to get there a little early so he can warm up to the water, or he'll take his whole half of his session to warm up to the water. And that's not okay, because we got to get working on skills, buddy. So we get there early so he can be on the steps, so he's getting used to the water.
Getting used to the temperature. Used to all of the different things.
So, you know, and it's not going to be the same for every kid.
No.
Neurotypical.
Even later. Yeah.
You know?
And this can be said even on a broader scope. We're talking, I've got children in the pool with cerebral palsy. I've got children in the pool with physical differences. And everybody needs to be approached, again, where they are and in a way that really addresses their needs and their capabilities, as well as places in which they need help.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you do a great job of building that trust and, you know, really working on focusing on the comfort aspect of it with the children and building that relationship, you know, and you do a great job of, you know, gradually desensitizing them to different activities that you're going to be doing, or changing the methodology that you're using for, you know, this child versus this child.
I've been so lucky over the years. I feel like I have been definitely funneled into this position by the powers that be. Absolutely. Because when Riz and I were talking in the beginning and getting to know each other, we realized we have friends in common. I asked her if she knew about DIR. She's like, yes. And of course, this our contact is the exact same person. I was their labor doula. Because of that, I was exposed to DIR as an alternative to ABA because of other relationships or other chance meetings. Gosh, one person I met at the Renaissance Festival, because we were talking about our children, we became friends and I learned about different modalities that I can use, not just with my kids, but with my larger kids population.
Yeah. And I think that's what, like, how we click so much.
Absolutely.
Is because I'm the same way. I mean, I pick up people everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
My husband's like, can you just not? Like,
no,
I mean,
I'm not capable of just not. I'm sorry.
I've met people on airplanes and I still talk to them. Like, there's people that you sit with. I mean, I have that type of personality.
I have a group of friends that I met at a concert 3 or 4 years ago. That we just clicked. We all decided to go to a concert by ourselves and we ended up somehow sitting together and we're still friends.
See?
Like, it's like that one of one of my best girlfriends. Okay. We just said, when she's in town, we go out and it's a great time.
So I want to talk about this because I feel like there's a lot of, you know, misconceptions out there when it comes to, and people say, oh, they'll learn naturally, you know. You don't really need supervision and instruction. It doesn't really matter. Lessons don't matter, you know, or, you know, if they can't float, they can't, you know, they'll be safe. I hate that when people say that.
Well, you know, if they can't back float, it's fine. It's not the best, but it doesn't mean they can't be in the water. Floating looks different on a lot of people. I know adults that float. Again, basically the only thing that hits the top of the water is their head. That's it. And then I know adults that can float beautifully. Sometimes it's a matter of core strength. Let's be honest. A lot of us adults could use some core work. Our modern lifestyles are not built to develop that or maintain it. So it's something, if you're not taking time to do, probably should. I also tell my kids and my adults that you have to stretch every single day until you're at least 100. After that, it's up to you. But, you know, the idea that they'll learn naturally, we've shown over and over again in really horrific ways that's not necessarily accurate. I like to consider a swim class as a safe place to fail. If you go underwater in a swim class and you've got a coach or a lifeguard there or both, you know that you've got somebody that's going to pull that child up and that's going to give them things that they can do to fix it. I had to get comfortable in the beginning learning to let a baby go underwater and help them get themselves to the top so that I know that if it happens without me, that they have a chance. When I was about 13 years old, I was in a pool at a water park and I watched a kid struggle like crazy. And we tried real hard to get him to get out of the pool or do something else. And by the end of it was a wave pool. By the end of it, he was at the bottom. And he did not make it out of that pool. And I, you know, anytime I think about it, that's the picture I have in my head. It's why I kept swimming even beyond synchronized swimming. It's why I went into safety as soon as I could as a kid, because I want all of these kids to enjoy the water and have it and fun and love it as much as I do. But I also want to make sure that they make it.
Yeah.
Because some of these kids that a lot of professionals probably have written off, have beautiful futures ahead of them.
Oh, yeah.
They've got wonderful things to do. They've got beautiful minds to share with us. And I really want them to have that opportunity.
You know, some people say, well, my kid's afraid of the water, but these lessons won't work for me.
Well, and absolutely they will.
They will, because my son was too.
Yeah.
And that was the whole thing. I was like, well, yeah, he's afraid of getting into pools. But what if he got pushed in, or what if he got knocked over into a pool and he doesn't know how to get out of it?
You know, neurotypical kids don't necessarily understand the dangers of knocking an autistic child into the pool. They don't know. So it's possible, just trying to expand their friend group, it could put them in danger if they don't have at least some skills. With Elijah, it all started with just getting comfortable with being in the water, putting her feet in the water, slowly crawling into the water, walking in the water, and just getting comfortable, and then going to safety, and then getting comfortable, and then going to safety. Maybe he wasn't comfortable the whole time. Maybe he was a little stressed out, but we did it in small increments so that it didn't completely traumatized. I think at that point, that's where we need to manage expectations of what the lesson's going to look like. Because the important thing at that point is developing the relationship. Even you'll hear as a psych major, you'll hear that that therapeutic relationship is the number one thing that determines whether or not therapy is successful. It is the same thing with OT. It's the same thing with ABA. It's the same thing with speech therapy. And it's the same thing with an adaptive coach. If your kid does not get along with that teacher, it's not going to work.
It won't work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, being pushy or forceful,
absolutely,
it's not going to, it's not sustainable for one. And for two, it's not good for the long, impact.
Yeah, no, I don't ever want to be the reason why a child is terrified of the water. And I've had kids come into my pool that parents really felt like this is the last ditch effort because the last place they were in was kind of terrifying to them. And it may not have been a terrifying place. It was just inappropriate for that specific child.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, maybe not for swim for us, but like in other aspects.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, you have to sometimes cut ties. Yep. They're not working. And that's okay.
I am well known in the school system here for saying, I know that you want the best for my child. I also know that you guys don't get along. So I'm going to move him, and putting up with the fight that will sometimes happen with a school because they don't want to do that. They don't do that. And they definitely don't want the parent to dictate who's where their child is going. But honestly, if my child feels like you don't like them, nothing else is happening. Yeah. It's going to be a wasted year. Let's not do that. The reason Zach was ever in school was for social stuff anyway.
I mean, a lot of our children on the spectrum are so incredibly advanced, and sometimes they just don't think they are. But they totally are in so many ways.
Well, he can't. Have you paid attention to what he can? Because he's long dividing in his head.
You know, but I don't know why the world doesn't see our kids in a different way that we see them.
But, you know, it's perspective. And if you've never taken the time to really change your perspective, to change that paradigm, you really don't. I think that just a lot of people don't have enough frame of reference to get it.
I love that you brought that up, because there's an episode I'm working on that talks about changing the, you know, outside perspective, the paradigm of looking into our autistics.
I like that.
So it's going to be a very interesting episode. So what kind of tips do you have for our parents and caregivers out there? You know, first steps for families to explore maybe adaptive swim or talk to their local, maybe they don't have adaptive swim, you know, because really you're not adaptive swim. We kind of made this up, not made it up, but like it came into about.
Because, I had adaptive swim.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I know that. But in the beginning.
Yeah, in the beginning I wasn't, no.
Because we were pushing for this because there wasn't around here.
Yeah.
We're pioneering.
The school definitely wasn't. They just met the need.
Yes, they met the need because there was a need and nobody around was doing adaptive swim. So we're now the trailblazers because adaptive swim does exist, but sometimes it's not available here. Like it wasn't here, now it is now because we have been the trailblazers for this area.
So I think the first thing that needs to be done above all else is you need to call all of the schools and ask them about what they offer for adaptive swim. Ask them a lot of questions about the background of the trainers, about their success rate, and about their retention rate. Ask about, their methods, their methodology. If they don't tell you that it's going to be different for every child, and we really need to assess your student first before we can give you concrete answers, before they kind of launch into what they would normally try and do, maybe keep looking. Or it's possible that they'll tell you what they have and say, but I don't know yet, and we're going to have to see. That's a good opening. That's somebody that understands that it's going to have to be different and that they're going to have to make some adjustments. That's a potential for growth. So if you're not, say, in this area and need to find a place that's adaptive, you might have to find a place that's willing to learn how to be adaptive. Yeah. And that's okay.
I think that too. And what kind of tips can you give, you know, that can incorporate, you know, water safety at home, you know, like bath time, maybe even like sprinklers, pools, bodies of water because it's Florida. And, you know, like maybe some strategies for calming the fears.
Mm.
And
exposure. You have to, I understand that. I understand the stress. I know that tension that builds in your core when you come to a place where your child is going to have a reaction. It has to be prescribed. You have to be prepared for it. And when you're ready, when you've done that, you just have a goal in mind. Like today, we're going to put our toe in water. However, we're going to do it. We're going to walk around that pool as many times as we need to until we put a toe in water. Maybe today we're going to walk around the lake one time, or we're going to walk to the lake without running in and trying to get into the water. One time we're going to talk about when we get to the water, we don't jump in. We don't do this thing. We have to ask before we go in. And this is not safe because there are animals in here and we can't see. We can't see the bottom. Just having those conversations, building it. For a child that's afraid, we need to constantly create exposure. For a child that's not afraid, we still have to create exposure, but prepared exposure, both of them prepared exposure, to allow them to have those experiences and learn that it doesn't have to be unsafe, or it doesn't have to be a complete no. It just has to be under certain circumstances. I've always been a big believer of, you know, our kids love structure. I like routines, not schedules. So if we know that we're going to go to the water, what I would have said to my son is, we're going to go to the water, but we're not going to go in the water. We're going to go to the water and we're going to say hi to the water. We're going to say hi to the animals in the water. We're going to walk from here to here. And then we're going to go back to the car. We're going to go back to the playground, because then he knows what the schedule is. And then we would do that every time we were at that park. There's water feature there. We're going to go to the water. We're going to say hi to the water. We're going to say hi to the animals. We're going to walk from here to here. And then we're going to go back. Then he knows that that's what's an appropriate thing to do there. It's basically, we're creating a social story, but we're doing it experientially.
Yeah.
Oh, I just found a way to put that into words. Thank you.
Well, and you said something too that I wanted to highlight too, like exposure therapy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I say that all the time. There's things that Elijah needs to work on, needs to overcome. And I'm like, okay, today's exposure therapy day. We're going to go do whatever.
Going to the mall. I know it's loud. It's going to stink. We're going to do it anyway.
There was a whole thing about Elijah going through doorways. And so I just made a plan. I talked to, just like you said, it's like a social story. I talked to him through it before we got there. We talked about it, you know, beforehand. And we're going to go through these doors. Having that communication, it was very open. Did he like it? No. But can he go through doorways now without a problem? Yes. Because I exposed him over and over. Sometimes we went every single day to an, I know that the store would give him a meltdown. All we had to do was walk through the door and walk out. That's it. I had put no more expectations on it. So, and it did work. And we don't have that issue anymore. We had a thing about flushing toilets and public bathrooms. We went every day and I flushed all the toilets. I had him to flush the toilets. I know it kind of sounds extreme, but that's sometimes what you got to do.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, I would love to protect my children from all the things that make them feel unsafe. As a mom, that is exactly what I would love to do. But when I look at the long-term consequences of it, and when I look at how a neurotypical child grows up, I understand that they slowly have to learn about their environment, learn how to deal with certain things, even if they're not great or comfortable things. There's certain that the sun is hot and maybe it's not comfortable. Outside is cold, but we still have to go outside. We still have to go to work or go to school or all of those things. So that is kind of how that works. He's going to have to go to a bathroom. So, and he's got to be able to not flee as soon as the toilet flushes so that he can finish doing what he needs to do in there. Those things have to happen. And similarly, no matter where you live, you're probably going to be around at least one body of water. So knowing what to do when he's around that and what is appropriate and what isn't is important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, what are some real world examples of autistic individuals thriving with adaptive swim that you've seen? I mean, I think Elijah's a great version.
Elijah's doing amazing. He's so, when he first came into the pool, he would barely come into the pool and he was not happy to see me. You know, it was not a great thing, but I just kept singing to him and talking to him and walking with him until he got more comfortable and he learned to trust me and he learned that he couldn't trust my behavior. He learned that my actions and my words were the same. Gosh, that's so important. And I think that if we have professionals listening, please, for the love of God, your words and your actions have to sync up. And if they don't, they are noticed immediately.
Yeah.
And that will damage your therapeutic relationship. Don't lie to a kid with autism. Don't lie to a kid, but don't lie to a kid with autism, because it's going to be really difficult to maintain that relationship from then on. They know, and they're going to take note. Now your words and actions don't match. Gosh, you know, I think some of us probably could learn from them a little bit on that one. It's a smart thing to do. But, you know, at that point, now that we've built it up, he is moving. I remember when he would not touch a flotation device at all.
Yeah.
They were poison.
Come through it. And I remember when I was in the pool.
Yeah.
I had to be in the pool too.
We were in the pool together.
Because couldn't do it without mom.
No.
But now I don't have to get impulsive.
And he sits not just in, like, at first he finally took to the ring, and then we moved to the cheese, which is kind of a foam platform. And now he can function with just one pool noodle.
Yeah.
And I can even, like, I've got different buoyancy pool noodles that I've put him in. I could put him on a small pool noodle for a couple of them, and he would tolerate that and keep kicking or keep moving. We're trying to synchronize now kicks and arm movements at the same time. We're trying to approximate swim. I just came up with a whole new method. You're going to love it, to actually get us to move through the water now that we're comfortable with swim things. There, he has made so much progress, but it's not just him. I've got another student who, he was one of the ones that I was talking about, would just throw himself into water, underwater, and not really think about it. He just loved to look at you from underwater until he realized he needed to breathe, until his body would kind of slammed into him at that point. So I used the cheese with him for so long that, okay, you can do that. You hang up here, and if you want to throw yourself in the pool, that's fine. But when we end up underwater, we immediately have to go into a back float and do that. I have him out here.
Nice.
Yes, this is, and that's so separated from me. Most kids won't do that. And, you know, the trick with that was learning that he just did not want you in front of him. He will learn next to you. He will learn in front of you, but he doesn't want anybody in front of him. Once we got there and I didn't try and stop him from going underwater,
then
all of a sudden it was fine.
See, you gotta meet them where they're at.
Meet them where they are.
Yeah.
As soon as you do that, you're gonna find that person. And I love, with that specific student, I utilized a lot of DIR in the beginning to create the relationship, because he had a couple of words, but he wasn't really using them in a way that was working for me, like that I understood at first. So I just mirrored his behavior. And we worked together until he realized that he could use that to communicate with me. And now we're in great shape. I adore that kid. He's good.
I love that. I love that, you know, you take that whole approach to the child, and it's a wonderful approach.
I have another one that came into the pool that was absolutely verbal at that time and is just really wants to swim, but there were coordination issues, and that child is now nearly a shark. So that is our top level in that class, because we just had to kind of brainstorm, and I brainstormed with the family what it was that was necessary, what was missing. They constantly worked with her. They're just like you. You know them. And now this student is thriving, and side breathing, and really working on all those coordination things necessary.
I'm happy to see her, you know, excelling at that too. So, and I know her mom too works a lot with her. So,
absolutely. There's no, both of them, there's no question. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, how can people get in contact with you, Joy?
So, the best way to reach me is on my Facebook page through Miss Joy of, that's Miss Joy Loves Learning Facebook.
And I'll put that in the description.
That's
so people will be able to connect that with you.
I've been trying to figure out how to add coach to there. When I did it, I was just doing children's classes. I was focusing on that bit, and I hadn't thought to encompass all of this. I was doing this through the school, but I think it's important, especially for adaptive. And I'd love to talk to other coaches trying to get into adaptive. I'd love to help people get certified. I've learned so much in how to become certified through that. So anybody that's interested in getting certified in adaptive swim, I have a lot of different avenues for that. One in particular that I've already used here is the Autism Society of Florida. They are trying to help people become adaptive swim certified. And I think it's a great opportunity. There's also I believe it's the Justice Foundation, JUSTUS. Very, very cool.
Okay.
So there's a lot of opportunities, and I'm going to start making that available in other ways as well. But I want to get people certified in adaptive swim and ready to do this, so that it's available for all of our kids.
Yeah, because like we were talking about, you know, she's a great coach, but there's no real adaptive swim. So we trailblazed it here because the school was willing to listen to us, and the school was willing to add it and make changes. And so that was great. But, you know, there needs to be more, because there's a lot more kids that need it.
I think technically your family is why I was brought into the school.
It was because the owner, you know, reached out to me and was like, hey, I got this new coach starting. Her name is Joy. And he's like, I think you guys would really hit it off. And he was totally right. You know, we're now, you know, like I said, mom friendships, much more than that, because we love each other.
Absolutely.
So, you know, he was right. We definitely did click, and we definitely did need each other, I think.
We did. We did. I think that this has been a fantastic relationship, not just for us, but for what it can build.
Yes.
And I think that that's fantastic. And for Elijah,
I like that guy. He's always my to the forefront, you know. He's always the one that I think about first and putting him, you know, doing these things. But, you know, he has really changed my trajectory and what I thought I was going to do with my life.
Can I tell you, though, meeting Elijah has been good for both of my kids as well.
Really?
Because, well, so my kids are verbal. Phoebe was verbal from the very beginning. And then my son, it took a little bit longer. They have a frame of reference, but they really weren't looking back. And I think that they never gave themselves enough credit to understand where they came from. And it opened up a number of conversations for them to understand what it was like and what we dealt with, because, you know, not everybody has the memory that they would like to have. And also, who remembers what was going on when you were two?
I don't.
I believe there was an Oscar the Grouch cake in there somewhere, but that's about it.
I was a weird child. I kind of remember a lot about being two. I remember we lived in Chicago.
We did too. No way.
Yeah. Yeah. We lived in Chicago. And I remember my little friend, her name was Ashley. We always got our hair done. So I remember a lot about mine. And then we moved to Ohio when I was like four. I just turned four. So it was a big change for me.
Oh.
You know.
Understood. My mom was a lot like me. So I did not have a lot of little friends when I was little. So,
autism's interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is. Like you said, and so many people that's, you know, in the world of autism, you meet one.
Oh, yeah.
You met one. Mm-hmm. You met one person's, you know. But it's the same with us, too. You know, think about it.
Yeah.
There's only one me.
Absolutely.
There's only one Joy.
My children are siblings. They're just 11 days shy of 3 years apart, and they are almost polar opposites. In sensory profile, they are polar opposites. In political profile, belief structures, they are like the way they look at the world, their viewpoints. They grew up in the exact same situation, you know, but they're just completely different humans. Like, they are the definition of, if you've met one children, you've met one child with autism.
And they grew up in the same home.
Absolutely.
And they're only, 3 years?
They're 11 days shy of 3 years apart.
See, I mean, it's not like they're like 10-year age.
Oh, gosh, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No.
Because sometimes, like, when children have a big age difference, sometimes they're vastly different.
You know?
But not normally when they're close. But I don't believe that, because me and my brother were not similar either.
I find it really funny because, you know, when my daughter was born, and she was a sensory avoider big time. There was a lot of things that I really didn't understand what was going on at first. Her brother came out ready to rumble. He didn't know his strength, needed a lot of deep pressure input. His sensory diet was like the length of the refrigerator. Like we were, but it's where I learned more, because in the way that I think the neurotypical world looks at ASD, he was more diagnosable. My daughter's diagnosis was so much more difficult to come by because nobody really wanted to call it what it was, because it didn't look the same.
Yeah. And normally with boys and girls, it looks different.
Yeah.
Sometimes girls are harder to diagnose.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't we know it?
But we women and men are so different. Mm-hmm. So they really should make it maybe a male version and a female version.
I think that would be really.
I really think they needed to look at that, because our brains are not even wired the same. So, you know, I'm going to digress off that topic because we could talk about that forever.
That'll be a whole nother episode.
That can be a, let's make
that. We should consider that. Absolutely.
But I'm going to tell you guys right now, this will be not the only time that you see Coach Joy, because I'm going to be having our roundtables, and she's probably going to be on a few of them. And I can't wait to the roundtables.
We're going to have a good time.
Yeah, very good time. Before we, you know, wrap up, I just want to ask you, you know, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners about adaptive swim?
Yeah. You know, I'm a huge proponent for adaptive swim, but I want to say more than anything else, I see so many of our kids using flotation devices and relying really heavily on the flotation device. Some of the kids will only go in with floaties on their arms and the vest and the whole thing. And that is a great right now strategy. The problem is that when kids fall in a pool, they're not wearing a flotation device. They might be dressed for church. They may be in seriously encumbered in clothing. And if they don't have some kind of strategy to deal with that situation, it could be heartbreaking. So I want to make sure that every kid has some access to swim instruction. And we just make sure that we take the time to do these things without the floaties as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that. You know, and they also do like, wear your pajamas so you take the feeling of, you know, how it feels on their body, you know, because the clothes is going to feel different than wearing a swimsuit.
You never know, you know, when you fall in the pool, like, gosh, nightgowns. Nightgowns are my big one. And it was a real eye-opener for me when the first time we had a young girl come in a nightgown and try and swim. Their legs just get all tangled up in nightgowns. I really don't like the idea of putting children with autism in nightgowns anymore, because if you fall in the pool or anything else, it can get caught up in so many things. I can think of a number of ways in which it could be dangerous.
Yeah. And see, that's what I like about it, learning about the safety aspect of it, because, you know, at least they're there in a safe environment and they can, you know, work through those.
It's a safe place to fail.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. We learn to deal with the sensory bits. We learn to kind of mitigate for them being heavy. And we learn that maybe we don't want to be in that piece of clothing anymore. That might be.
Maybe let's not wear that.
Yeah.
Scream. Thanks. Wow. What an eye-opening conversation. Water safety is so much more than just learning to swim. It's about understanding sensory needs and communication styles and really building confidence in, you know, the water, and hoping that today's episode gave you practical steps to help keep your child safe while also making swimming a positive experience. You know, if you want to learn more, be sure to connect with Coach Joy. And like I said, I'm going to put her information in the show notes. And you can check out the resources for adaptive swim programs. They're also going to be listed in the resources. And some of the sites that Coach Joy has talked about with us today. And before you go, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review. It helps us, you know, for the podcast to reach more families who need it.
Absolutely.
You know, who needs this information.
Absolutely.
If you have a topic that you would love for us to cover, send me a message. Until next time, stay safe, informed, and keep advocating for your child's needs.
Today's episode is brought to you by Legal Shield. Because peace of mind starts with being prepared. As a parent and an advocate, I know how important it is to have access to legal support, especially when navigating the challenges of autism advocacy. With Legal Shield, you'll have 24/7 access to a dependable network of attorneys for advice on every IEP meeting and school accommodation to understand your rights as a caregiver. Also, those transitional times for guardianship and other legal matters, such as trust, wills, and other things. It is affordable and easy to use and designed to give you the tools needed to confidently face life legal challenges. Whether you are dealing with contracts, legal documents, or simply just need advice, Legal Shield is here to help. Protect your family, advocate for your loved ones, handle life's curveballs with confidence. Visit the link in the show notes below to learn more how to sign up today. Legal Shield empowers families, one step at a time. Thank you for tuning in to Finding Your Identity in Your Autism Journey. I hope today's episode inspired you, brought you some clarity, or simply reminding that you are not alone. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and if you enjoyed this conversation, leave a review and share it with someone who might need it. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your voice matters, and together we can navigate this journey one step at a time.